after taking a look. I mean, how significant is this for you right now?
From a military perspective, what comes after Hama will not be the same as what came before. However, I prefer not to be overly optimistic during the battle. I like to remain cautious and vigilant to avoid complacency and ensure we don't suffer losses while believing we are safe.
What comes after this? What's after Hama?
The course of the battle. As for the secrets of the battle, let's leave them to the unfolding events. You will witness them in reality, which is better than discussing them now.
In a matter of days, you have taken major cities. What's changed? How are you able to do this now?
In recent years, there has been a unification of internal opinions and the establishment of institutional structures within the liberated areas of Syria. This institutionalization included the restructuring within military factions. They entered unified training camps and developed a sense of discipline. This discipline allowed them, with God's guidance, to engage in a battle in an organized manner. The progress and execution of plans have been swift, with clear communication and adherence to commands. They stop where they should stop and withdraw where they should withdraw. The revolution has transitioned from chaos and randomness to a state of order, both in civil and institutional matters and in military operations alike.
Some believe this is happening because the allies of the Assad regime, the Russians, Hezbollah, Iran, that they're weakened, they're preoccupied with other wars. And this is why we are seeing this happen right now. And the Syrian regime itself weakened. Is this what is happening right now? Is this why you chose to launch this offensive right now?
As you know, we are still in the midst of the battle. And discussing such details at this time is not wise.
But you faced more of a resistance in Hama than you did in Aleppo. What do you think happened? Why did the regime withdraw like it did?
The seeds of the regime's defeat have always been within it. It has been effectively dead since that time. However, the Iranians attempted to revive the regime, buying it time, and later the Russians also tried to prop it up. But the truth remains, this regime is dead.
In the last year, it seemed like Bashar al-Assad survived the war. He was welcomed back into the Arab fold and on the world stage.
The Arab countries' evaluation of the situation was mistaken. Some Arab countries try to separate the regime from Iran's project. This is impossible. Even if the regime wanted this, it can't implement it. It's a subservient relationship. Iran can disengage from the regime, but the regime can't. To describe the regime as victorious is deeply unjust to the many children, people, women subjected to rape in prisons, displaced individuals scattered across the world, those drowning in the seas, and those living in tents on the borders of other countries. What kind of victory are we talking about?
In the past, you have talked about strict Islamic rule. Is that still the plan?
People who fear Islamic governance either have seen incorrect implementations of it or do not understand it properly. We are talking about something that aligns with the traditions and nature of the region. The most important thing is to build institutions. We are not talking about rule by individuals or personal whims. It's about institutional governance. Syria deserves a governing system that is institutional, not one where a single ruler makes arbitrary decisions.
Many Syrians are happy and will be happy to see the end of the Assad regime, but they're also worried about what HTS rule would mean, including minorities.
No one has the right to erase another group. These sects have coexisted in this region for hundreds of years, and no one has the right to eliminate them. There must be a legal framework that protects and ensures the rights of all, not a system that serves only one sect, as Assad's regime has done.
You know, listening to you speaking, you've gone through quite the transformation once an Al-Qaeda leader, your group has had affiliations with Al-Qaeda, with ISIS, and now you are projecting this image of a moderate leader and a moderate group. What is HTS right now?
Hayat Tahrir al-Sham is one of the factions in the region, just like all the others. Now we're talking about a larger project. We're talking about building Syria. Hayat Tahrir al-Sham is merely one detail of this dialogue, and it may dissolve at any time. It's not an end in itself, but a means to perform a task confronting this regime. Once that task is complete, it will transition to a state of governance, institutions, and so on. I believe that everyone in life goes through phases and experiences, and these experiences naturally increase a person's awareness. A person in their 20s will have a different personality than someone in their 30s or 40s, and certainly someone in their 50s.
So are those days behind you?
Sometimes it's essential to adjust to reality, and because someone who rigidly clings to certain ideas and principles without flexibility cannot effectively lead societies or navigate complex conflicts like the one happening in Syria.
People listening to this are going to wonder why they should believe you. You are still a specially designated global terrorist by the United States with a $10 million bounty on your head. Your group is a proscribed terrorist organization by the United States, by the UN, by the EU, and others.
I say to people, don't judge by words, but by actions. I believe the reality speaks for itself. These classifications are primarily political and at the same time wrong. I define a terrorist as someone who intentionally kills civilians, harms innocents, or displaces people. If we're being honest, many of the wars waged by major powers in Arab, Muslim, and even non-Muslim countries have involved the deliberate killing of thousands, the destruction of homes, and the displacement of millions. Even the regime itself is guilty of such actions.
But the US and others would say is that you were parts of groups that did exactly that.
Personally, I have not done these things. The situation must be understood in its historical context. There was a massive war in Iraq that deeply stirred people's emotions, prompting many to go there. The circumstances of that war led people to various places, and my path led me to one of those locations. Given my level of awareness and my young age at the time, my actions evolved to where I am today. I didn't go to Iraq with those intentions. I went to defend the Iraqi people. When I returned to Syria, I didn't want to bring what happened in Iraq into Syria. That's why there were disagreements between us and ISIS.
People would be wondering why you've agreed to speak with us.
What is happening in Syria is significant for the entire world. This event has positive repercussions globally because under the regime's rule, Syria became a source of concern and trouble for everyone. Stabilizing Syria will bring many people back. Today, in the liberated areas, about one-third of the population lives in camps, approximately 1.5 million people. I believe we can soon reach a point where there are no camps. With the rehabilitation of the liberated areas, people will return to their homes. Many refugees in Turkey will likely return, as will a significant number of refugees in Lebanon and Jordan. Even refugees in Europe may return to rebuild their country.